12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
In the city of dreams, everyone wants to be a star, but at what cost? 12-Sided Stories presents Otherworld Hollywood.
Hello, everybody. My name is Wes Otis. This is Otherworld Hollywood, episode number one. We are here with some wonderful players. This is our Call of Cthulhu actual play. Let's start with Michelle.
Hey, I'm Michelle, and I will be playing Belle Bellington, your local gossip columnist.
Hello, everyone. My name is Candace, also known as Candace Magnificent. My pronouns are they, she, and today I am going to be playing Ebony Belafonte, she, her.
Hello, hello, everyone. I'm Sam Starr. I use she, they, and the occasional fey pronouns, and I will be playing Amani DeVoe, an up-and-coming starlet who uses she, her pronouns.
Hey, I'm Lev Rodriguez Shivers, pronouns they, them, and today I'm going to be playing Roberta Robbie Cerillos, they, she, a kind of new-to-town screenwriter.
Hey, y'all, I'm Mac Beauvais, she, her, and I'm going to be playing Cass Richardson, a.k.a. Lenore Von Mori, a.k.a. simply The Vamp.
Before we start, please consider supporting the show through Patreon or on ko-fi.com, spelled ko-fi. Now, on with the show.
All right, so this is our first episode. We don't have a recap, obviously. Let me tell you what's going on. Welcome to 1950s Hollywood. Right now, there is a war raging in Korea that no one's talking about. The communist Red Scare is on, and Hollywood is cannibalizing itself by blacklisting their own people who may have joined up with the Communist Party during the 30s and are now being pushed out of the business. They're being pushed into a very specific part of the business, a low B-tier movie part of the industry called Poverty Row, which is on Gower Street that stretches up through Hollywood. All of these low-budget studios are making horror, science fiction films for the really cheap, mostly black and white. And it's where a lot of artists go to start their careers, and a lot of artists go to end their careers, whether they know it or not. We start in August, mid-August. It's hot. And for those of you who do live here in Los Angeles, back in the 50s, the smog was way worse. It was really bad. And it's really hot. Right now, we zoom in on Hollywood Now, a publication kind of like Variety that does gossip columns and basically reports on the lives of the rich and the famous in Hollywood. Michelle, can you tell us what Belle looks like?
Belle is always the consummate professional newswoman, right? She's about like 5'5", 5'6". She's slender. She's got dark hair, light olive skin. She's in a very stylish kind of form-fitted but a flared skirt, you know, 50s thing, but not with a petticoat or anything. She's too old for that crap. She's, you know, early 40s. So her hair is still done up a little bit like the 1940s styles where it's rolled, and she's got her little fascinator on, but, you know, and she's got her little suit jacket and her heels, and always a steno pad in her hand. And her makeup is always done to a T because she wants to look like she belongs at any studio she walks into.
Belle, you sit across from your editor. She is a well-dressed Korean woman. She has on a beautiful outfit, like a 1950s dress with her hair all done up. And she looks across at the desk at you and says, "It's been a while since you've given us anything with teeth. What's going on out there?"
"Well, you know how it is. It's summer. It's hiatus for most people. There's nothing going on."
Don't give me that. This is when things are going on the most. This is when husbands are cheating on their wives. This is when people are going to parties they should never go to. This is when you and your photographer should be out there taking pictures and reporting on them.
I'm doing my best.
See, I don't know if that's true or not, because I don't have an article here to put in the paper.
I've been hitting the pavement, but all I've got lately is fluff, just nothing.
Have you been following all the trials and congressional hearings they've been having?
I have.
All right. Well, your rival, if you can really call her that, because she's kicking our ass every week, Hedda, well, she is going in hard on all of these people who are shown to be communist. That's an angle that I think you should start looking at.
If I'm being honest, I don't want it to come back and bite me later once everything dies down.
If I'm being honest, I want to sell more papers. And we can't do that if you suddenly have this worry about the future.
Somebody's got to worry about my future.
Well, do you like paying your rent? Because I need something to pay you for, is what I'm saying.
I'll find something. I'll dig dirt up on somebody.
All right. Good to know. Johnny's out in the hallway waiting for you to give him something to go take pictures of. So why don't you go dig up some dirt then?
All right.
You walk out and there's this photographer kid, Johnny Tort, and he is sitting with his back against the wall. He's probably 5'11", scrawny looking kid. He's got dark hair, lighter complexion, and looks up when he sees you walk out and says, okay, where are we going today? What are we doing?
Well, I mean, she wants dirt, we'll get her dirt. There's always something going on at Cut'em. Let's head over there.
That's a burnout place, though.
I know, but there's always something dirty. You know that.
All right, let's go. So you all head out. Let's make our way over to Robbie's apartment. What does Robbie look like, Lev?
Robbie is a little bit of a mess of a person already. They wear those kind of like tight pattern pants that people in the 50s wore. They're usually tight so that they can just put their braces on over it rather than under. They've got those little lace-up shoes, white blouse kind of tucked into the top of their pants, a little handkerchief in their hair. They don't do anything else with their hair. It's pretty long and dark, and they just kind of tie a handkerchief around it to keep it out of their face. And someone at one point told them that they should always have a statement piece, so they have several incredibly eclectic ties that they just choose from every day. Some of them have like birds on them. Some of them have flowers. Some of them just have like kind of wacky patterns and colors. They almost never match their pants. Outside of their clothes, they have kind of like lightly tanned skin, dark brown eyes. Like I said, long black hair, and just kind of like an air of watching the world and trying to understand it constantly. Never really at rest from observation.
What does it look like when Robbie is writing for their scripts?
Robbie usually writes kind of cramped up in their apartment. It's a tiny little place right on Hollywood Boulevard, close to the Chinese Theater. There's one window. It's cramped and dark. There's like a singular little plant in a pot that's dying on the windowsill in the heat. The window is thrown open in the hopes of enticing any kind of a breeze in. And they're hunched over their desk, looking out onto Hollywood Boulevard, just scribbling in a notebook and then crossing things out and scribbling in a notebook and flipping pages back. It's a little bit manic, like they're trying to connect a web that only exists in their brain, and trying to share it with other people is an exercise in madness.
Absolutely. Do you have a pet or not? A cat, a dog, a bird?
Robbie had a fish. That fish lasted maybe a week. They barely remember to take care of themselves, much less anything else.
All right. So it's midday and you've been working hard on your newest script that you're hoping that will be produced at Cut'em Films. Cut'em Films is this low budget film studio that allows a lot of people to get their start. And you have been able to get a couple of movies submitted and made. The thing that you notice is that once you turn something in, they tend to have you do a lot of rewrites, and then they'll come in and redo your vision a lot, sometimes cutting out whole sections due to budget. What kind of film are you working on? Do you have a name for it? What's its subject?
Robbie's still working on a title. It is a medical kind of thriller horror about the testing of contraceptives in Puerto Rico. It goes off from reality pretty quickly. That's kind of its base, and then kind of transforms into like the medical horrors that are wrought by Neo-Malthusians and kind of being killed by their own weapon, in that like the medicine that they're giving these people turns them kind of into like a more powerful beings that can like fight back, basically. It's very dense. It's very like cerebral in certain points, but then gets very fantastical. As a concept, Robbie's really, really like hanging on to it. Having heard from their cousins about all the shit that's going on in Puerto Rico, they're just trying to like find a way to deal with like that emotional weight while also like giving power back to the people who are being hurt, and like making it a broader thing to be recognized by people who may never have even heard about it, which is a lot of things to try and put in one script.
Right. Absolutely. Now, if I remember correctly, a normal script for a movie is like 125 to 145 pages. How far over that count are you?
Robbie's pushing 250.
Oof. Fucking War and Peace there. All right. Now, do you have a typewriter?
They do. They tend to handwrite everything. And then as a means of editing, they typewrite and edit as they typewrite. So they're finishing up like the end of the script now, and have started like they have like a weird concert working of writing the end of the script, but starting back at the beginning of the script in typewrite to try and find any like discrepancies from the end to the beginning. It's this like chaotic, wild system that they've built as long as they've been writing.
Awesome. Okay. So as you're frantically writing all this stuff out and jumping on the typewriter and doing some editing, you're in one of the classic old apartments, which back then was probably only 10 years old at that point, but it's got your living room and then a little bedroom off to the side and a really small bathroom. And that's pretty much the setup. Suddenly you hear the water turn on in your bathtub.
Robbie will kind of set their pencil down and stand up, and you hear a creak as they stand up. And as they stand, you can see that they have leg braces that go from their hips to their ankles. They'll walk over to the tub, check the water, make sure it's clean and there's not like a sewer backup or something like that.
So you walk through the door and you get to the edge of the tub and you look in, and the door behind you closes. And when you look into the tub, you see this long shaft of clear water. And then in the very far darkness at the very bottom of the shaft, you see a large tail fin disappear into the darkness and the lights go out. Can you roll a resolve check for me?
Oh, already? Yes. Yes, I can. Cool.
First resolve check of the game.
All right, let's see.
Welcome to the show.
11. You're not going to break me yet.
No, not yet. So yeah, you retain your composure. The lights have gone out. It's almost pitch black and you can't really see anything. What do you want to do?
All right. Well, this is not the first time that the fuses have blown. The water is a little bit strange. I can handle this. This is fine. If there are any entities here with me, could you please turn the lights back on?
The light flickers on.
Oh, I really didn't think that would work. Fantastic. Thank you. If you're still here with me, can you please turn the water off?
When you look down at the tub, it's empty, but there is a strange flower sitting in the center of the tub.
Oh, thank you for the gift, I guess. And they're just going to pick up the flower. Robbie grew up in West Texas, where a lot of weird shit happens. So I think this is kind of not par for the course for them, but very like, all right, I expected this might happen someday. And it's not back home, but it's happening here and that's fine. I think that's the reason that they kind of handle it, is because they're like, yes, okay, I was expecting this my entire life. This is normal. This is fine. It's finally happening.
Okay, cool. All right, you get out of the bathroom.
Yeah, I think Robbie picks up the flower and kind of does what you do with a flower and puts it in some water.
Okay, so yeah, and you are able to finish up your script, and we're going to come back to you in a little bit. Across town, towards the center of Hollywood, near the Warner Brothers lot on the edge of West Hollywood, is A Star Is Born agency. It is a talent agency that has been Evie's home for 20 some odd years. You sit in a smoke-filled office, the sun hitting the blinds just in a way to cast bars across the entire room, and one ceiling fan desperately trying to clear any kind of air out of the situation, but just not working at all. Across from you is your agent, Richard Abrams. Older guy, Jewish, he's in his maybe late 50s, early 60s.
Now, Candace, can you describe Evie for us?
Through the grayish clouds and plumes of smoke that you see whirling up and around this room, you see a middle-aged woman. She's definitely older than you would think. Her skin is beautiful, this kind of deep, medium to deep brown color, high cheekbones, big almond-shaped eyes that are narrowly fixed on the man in front of her. She is smoking a cigarette that is one of those kind of long, slim styles and has a glove on that hand so as to not yellow her fingers or make her fingers smell. She has kind of like a deep brown lipstick on that's a little bit menacing. It's like almost black, which is unusual for the time. And her curvaceous kind of Coke bottle figure hasn't really bended to time at all, but you can tell she's been around the block. Like, she has an air of a beleaguered person rather than that young, bright-eyed innocence that was once all the rage.
Richard seems hesitant to speak. He quickly looks out the window and then looks back at you,
reaches over and says, "It's time for us to have a bit of a talk about reality." And he picks up a box of tissues and he puts it on the table in front of you.
What are these for, Richie?
I've been with you a long time, kid, and I got to level with you. Things aren't the way they used to be. We're not the way you used to be. Remember how young I was 30 years ago when you started?
What are you trying to say? I'm in my prime.
For certain roles, absolutely, honey. You are in your prime. For the roles that you want, not so much anymore. I've been trying to get you new work, but you've kind of aged out of the ingenue period of your life.
I can be a fatale. There's still time. I can dangle from a bridge. I can be tied up on a train track. I'm very versatile, darling. You know that.
I know. And you're still beautiful, but the public's seen your mug a lot. They've seen you throughout the years, and they started adding up the years and seeing how old you are and fresh new things coming into town all the time. You got to understand, things change. I can get you as many mom roles as you want.
A mother? That's repugnant, Richie.
At least it's not grandma.
Grandma?
Yes, that's down the road, 5 years from now.
I've never been so insulted. I've been here how many years with you?
30.
Oh, this is not the time to turn tail, Richie, darling.
I'm not turning tail. I'm trying to tell you the truth about the situation.
They can make movies for my greatness. I rose from being just another pretty face to what I am now. I'm good, Richie. You know I am.
You're great.
The men don't have to worry about this.
I can't change society for you. I can only get you a job.
Well, I can see that I'm not getting my way here.
I think she stands up, cigarette still in hand, and like just smashes the box of tissues off the desk.
He goes, "No need for hysterics. We can work this out."
This is not hysterics, Richie. Hysterics would be if I cried. I'm not crying. I'm opining the fact that I never left this shitty place before I had the chance to get someone who believed in my talent.
I believed in your talent.
You believe in my ass, Richie, which admittedly is still quite good. Better than a lot of those ingenues you speak of.
We do work in a field where one's ass does get them a job, though, do we not?
We do, so I don't see a problem. Do you have anything for me? Anything at all? Something unique? Something different?
Well, there's a weekly call for actors at Cut'em Films.
Cut'em? Oh, are things really so dire?
Yes.
If you can find me something good there, I suppose I will make the best of it.
I know you will. I know you will. I'm sorry that I had to be blunt with you, but times are changing.
They sure are, Richie. For all of us.
And I put my cigarette out on his desk, and I walk out.
All right. The door shuts, and that's where we're going to end that scene.
can we give a round of applause?
Hot damn.
That was amazing.
Oh, that was art.
I love it.
I literally.
I straight up said mommy.
I would do anything for her. What does she need from me personally?
The list is long.
The moment Robbie meets you, they're gonna start writing a new movie.
Has to.
We then move over to the nice, relatively spacious home in Hollywood. It's probably a 1920s bungalow kind of house, much more spacious than, say, Robbie's place. Mac, can you describe your character? Does she kind of have a vampire vibe?
They are different looks in a way. There's a couple of holdovers between them. She has basically like a Veronica Lake hairdo, so she has that sort of peekaboo bang. Her hair is brassy red, like a Lucille Ball. It's obviously dyed to be that vibrant, but it really offsets the fact that she's got these really sharp gray-blue eyes. When she's hanging around outside of costume, she usually has more of a sort of Katherine Hepburn sort of style. So a lot of like palazzo pants, more billowy blouses, you know, a little less form-fitting, but still very stylish. But the holdover from her look as Lenore is her hair, and also she's always sporting long red nails. And when she is in Lenore mode, she's usually in a very form-fitting, corseted black dress with a high collar, sort of a Dracula cape-esque collar back behind her neck. And she has a spider brooch that covers just right at the cleavage line so that she doesn't get in too much trouble with any of the codes.
You're at your home with your movie star boyfriend, Henri, who lives there / doesn't live there. What is home life like?
So it actually is not what people would expect, considering, you know, she's known as the Vamp. It is very well traveled looking, though, where it seems like they've gone and have had a lot of chances to collect knickknacks from all over the world. There's fine pieces of art, but also local artists as well. So it very much just seems to be a patron of the arts across the board. But very tidy, nothing too big, nothing too ostentatious. Maybe a couple of select props from films that she was particularly fond of. But again, nothing terrifically fancy and certainly not spooky in nature.
So Henri looks at you and he says, are you shooting today?
I'm shooting most days.
I gotta get you out of that. I mean, I know the television show is kind of taken off, but, you know, Warner Brothers, MGM, we gotta get you into bigger stuff.
Work is work, darling.
Yeah, but good work is so much better.
It's not about that, though. It's about the craft. It's about entertaining. It's about embodying a character and enjoying myself. It's not just about the paycheck at the end of the day. I've got what I need.
I get that. I guess I understand.
No, you don't. And that's okay. You don't have to understand. You're the big movie star here, not I.
I was planning on hanging out with Brent tonight, and I was hoping that you would go with us to the Shack. Now, the Shack is a dive bar that is actually a cover for a gay bar. And usually when you guys go out, you go out as a pair to kind of hide that fact. He's like, if you're free, I don't know how late you're going to be shooting, but, you know, would you mind going with me to...
I don't mind, just as long as I get a chance to change out of my Lenore look before we go.
But everybody loves your Lenore look. You're stunning in it.
I know, but it's just, it's corseted and uncomfortable.
I don't understand the whole corseted part, but I guess.
I keep telling you, I'll put you in it if you want to try.
I kind of do at some point. It would be interesting to find out. Plus, they're always having the competitions. So if I can get dressed up one of these times, I'd like to be in one.
You would definitely win, darling, if you go as Lenore Von Mori.
Are you seeing anyone right now? Not to pry too much. I know we don't talk about that, but you haven't brought anyone in a while.
You would know if I was seeing someone.
I guess I would.
You know more about me than anybody else does. Trust, darling.
And I do trust you, and I appreciate your trust. So, I'll see you around?
I suppose so. We'll see how long shooting goes. You know how it is.
Absolutely. All right, so we end that scene there. Let us jump over to a Greyhound bus making its way into the station in Los Angeles.
Sam, tell us what Imani looks like first before we jump in.
So getting off of the Greyhound, if you've ever seen What's Love Got to Do with It in the very beginning when Anime is getting off of the bus, she's very simple, down-home girl. Flowy, like 50s blouse, long ankle-length skirt with little kitten-heel slingbacks. Her hair is pressed out, but it's poofed a little bit to her natural state because of all of the sweat and heat. But she has like a little ribbon that pulls her little ponytail up at the top of her head, and it matches her skirt. Sweet little bean.
Imani, tell me what city you're coming from was like, where it was, and why you're suddenly in Los Angeles.
Well, life back home was a bit challenging, but we made it through. I'm originally from a very small-knit town off over on the bayou, about 20 minutes north of Louisiana. Well, New Orleans, to be specific. It was a very small, close-knit, church-going town. Mostly people in our hard-working people, homemakers, and stifling more than anything else.
So for any of you who have not been on a Greyhound bus for 5 days, I have, it is terrible. It is one of those situations where you just want to die by the time you get to the end of it. I did it when I was 12, and I had a full-grown mustache and beard when I got to California. 1 out of 5, not recommended. So you roll in, you have a flyer. Talent agents sometimes go throughout the country looking for actors, especially smaller studios who are looking for new talent to maybe bring up. And you have a flyer from a One Cut'em Films. It's a niche studio that does a lot of horror films and is touted as a great place to get your start in the industry. You get off the bus, and how much money do you have in your pocket? Are you well suited for this situation, or do you not have a lot on you?
I think Imani came with what little bit she could grab in the middle of the night. So it's not much, but it's maybe enough for...
to get you set up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a day or two, some food. We'll figure out how to go from there after.
Awesome. So what is the first thing you would do when you step off with your one suitcase?
I think Imani gets off the bus and she's all sweaty and matted and is like brushing these thick curls off of her forehead at this point. Of course, her edges started curling up and she's all just sticky, but she's clutching that flyer in her hand tighter than her own bag that she's carrying. And I think when she gets off the bus, she looks around, and there was another girl on the bus, I think, who was around the same age as she was. We picked her up somewhere near Texas or Oklahoma, I can't remember. But we started, you know, you're sitting on the bus next to each other for a couple of hours. You tend to have conversation. And she kind of just walks over to her and it's just like, I bum a cigarette off of you.
Of course. No, no problem at all. I've got more than I need right now. Here you go.
Thanks. And she just kind of is like looking around everywhere. She's never been in a city this big before. Everything is so fancy and grandiose.
This is your first time in the city?
Yeah, it's my first time over here ever. Actually.
Me too. It's a bit overwhelming.
Do you know where there's like... Well, you've never been over here either.
Maybe we should try and find a place, maybe a hotel or something, and then we can figure out where to go from there.
They have those types of things here.
Oh, I'm sure they do. They have to put these people somewhere.
I don't know why. I just figured everybody here had a house.
They have enough room, I bet.
This heat's so dry.
Yeah, it's definitely not like we're used to. I'm Trish, by the way.
Imani, pleasure to make your acquaintance.
It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance as well.
I was worried I'd be out here with no one, but it's always nice to make a new friend.
Well, do you want to go and see if we can find lodging?
Yeah, that's a great idea. And also, I'm starving.
Yeah, that food on that bus is
Those stops are never good.
If I have to drink one more cup of gas station coffee, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Not to mention whatever they called those gravy and biscuits. Ugh.
That was not gravy. I don't know what that was, but that was not gravy.
No, it was not.
Let's go find that lodging.
And I think Amani just like flicks the cigarette out of like half smoked cigarette out of her hand, like crushes it underneath her little shoe, and we'll just kind of start walking in a direction. I think I'm just following the traffic of other people that are getting off the bus and walking out of the train station, much like you do in an airport.
Yeah. Trish keeps up with you as you make a path through all of the people showing up. And the thing that you do recognize is there does seem to be a lot of younger people your age showing up at the bus stop coming off. As you look around more and more, you notice that there is definitely a large population of people showing up in Hollywood at this time, especially since the Second World War is over and people are looking for new things to do. We flash forward a week. Robbie, you finished your huge script and have brought it in. You are sitting around the studio. It's this big, empty warehouse with this basically chicken wire on the walls that is holding in the insulation on the walls. And if you think that sounds like it's low budget, they have that at Warner Brothers. So it's the same thing in every one of them. They all use chicken wire to hold up the insulation. And there are large cameras positioned. There's three big cameras, and the stage has been set for the TV show that is shot every night with special guests that come in, and then they watch a movie and do kind of the whole, at least that's what I'm assuming.
Yes, that, you know, there's special guests that come in, and it's a little early for it to be quite so Elvira-ish. I feel like Cut 'n Films maybe uses it to promote their own films. And so it's just sort of interstitial hosting of it, and like, oh, wasn't that scary? And like, you know, let's talk to the star of the film, blah, blah, blah.
Well, a lot of times they have you in films as well because they have a small stable of actors that they use. Like I said, you're all sitting around talking. You're waiting for Danny Trent to come out. Now, Danny is the owner of the studio. He's the owner of Cut 'n Films. He is a World War II veteran. He lost his left arm in the war and was a used car salesman for a couple of years. He's about 6'3", big guy. He is got this really short blonde hair and blue eyes, and he is a car salesman in a lot of ways. He's kind of big and vocal, and how he got into films is kind of perplexing. There's also a man standing in the back of the studio. He's always there. He's always watching what's going on, what's being filmed. So smoking a cigarette. He is in a burgundy suit that looks like it probably cost several thousand dollars. He's always smoking a cigarette and just kind of watching everything that's going on. It doesn't ever say anything. He's Latin. That's the only read you have on him. He's 5'11". He's got short black hair, brown eyes, is just kind of there. He gives off a mob vibe, definitely. Somebody who is possibly an enforcer, make sure things are going the way that they should be. At least that's the rumors that have gone around the studio. Right then, Danny burst out of his office and goes, "What the fuck is this?" And walks over to all of you and looks at you, Robbie, and goes, "I can't make this. Are you out of your mind? First of all, it's 245 pages.
I understand that. I was thinking maybe it could be a saga. You know, one film really focuses on the medical mistreatment and the trauma that these people are facing. The second film focuses on how they are changed by this procedure and by these things that happen to them. And the third film is them exacting retribution for all that they've been through.
A trilogy. Are you out of your mind? Do you know how much money we have?
No.
Week to week, we could go out of business at any point. We make one film, we put it out, we hope we get money to put it back into the business. And you give me this. I can't sell this in the South.
Well, you can't overgeneralize the South, Danny.
You know, you're right. You shouldn't generalize people. But see, in this reality where I live, our distributors do generalize the South as a bunch of white people who do not want to be told about horrible medical experiments.
Well, that's a shame, because that's a real thing that's happening in the world, and they should be aware.
All right, so this opus is going to be three films, you're saying?
Three films, yes. And as you were saying, you make one film to get money to make the next film, which is a very good incentive for people to want to watch the first film so that the second film gets made so that they understand what's happening.
I think there's a real disconnect on understanding audiences and how films work here.
What if, Danny, if I might...
Oh, please, go ahead.
A gimmick might soften things, a la William Castle. He's been doing really fantastic things with audiences in the theater and engaging them.
Are you talking about the guy who, like, did Smell-O-Vision?
Yes.
Does that sound like a good idea, Smell-O-Vision? It's...
I didn't say Smell-O-Vision in particular, did I?
No, that just sticks in my head as the thing that I remember him for. What do you think? What kind of gimmick?
I don't know yet. I'm just reading the script. It seems you're dream crushing without the full incentive when there might be other solutions.
Okay, so in this situation, you all are the creative people who come to the table with wonderful ideas and great dreams. And I am the money person who comes with the reality of the situation of what dreams we can make come true and what dreams are going to fail. I have to look at the whole picture.
I suppose some edits could be made.
Yes, some. Mm-hmm. Look, here's the deal. If you want this to fly, you need to rewrite some sections of it. People need to be watching this and not realizing that they're being taught something. Do you understand? If you're blatant about it, they're going to turn off.
Well, what if they don't understand it? What if I'm too oblique?
Well, if they're not smart enough to get it in the first place, then hitting them over the head isn't going to change their mind either.
It might, though. It might. Lots of information all at once is sometimes very useful.
You, new kid. Yeah, you. What? Yeah, you're from the South. What are they going to think about this?
Well, I think that there are some people in the South that are a tad bit ignorant, way more intolerant than anything else, and quick to anger when they feel the Southern likeness has been insulted. But that's just my own personal opinion.
Which is what I asked for.
I'm not necessarily like a spokesperson for everyone down there. There's more than one place in the South where, you know, people have sentiments, so.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for asking my opinion, though.
I appreciate your opinion. Thank you very much. What was your name? I'm sorry, Miss...
DuVoe. Imani DuVoe. Pleasure to meet you.
Fantastic. It's so nice to meet you. I'm Robbie.
Nice to make your acquaintance as well.
I will say I'm technically from the South as well, because Texas is technically a part of the South, although West Texas is a little bit different than the rest of Texas. I don't know where I was going with that. I was trying to make a connection. I'm very sorry.
She looks a little flustered at first, but is like trying to remain polite and quiet. Smile.
Absolutely. No worries whatsoever. We're all new here, trying to get to know each other.
It needs a rewrite.
I know I said I'd do it, but okay, what parts of this have to be rewritten, though, is the thing. I know you said, I realize I've gone into a lot of very specific medical jargon in several sections of this.
Yes, yes. The first 30 pages the first 30 pages is a lot. It's a lot. So you need to start there and just reel it in a little. I'm not saying I'm not making a movie, but I'm saying that you need to meet me halfway so that when they come for us and they say, hey, are you communist? I can say no, but I'm an idiot.
Well, okay. I won't say that. That would be a bad thing for me to say.
I might have a slot suggestion.
Please, yes.
Well, I figure most people are more open and susceptible to an idea when they don't feel like they're being lectured to. They kind of feel like they're just gaining their information within themselves. So, like, instead of writing the script like it was a medical school dissertation, we come at it from one specific person's story. Like we center it on that and we learn through the world through that person. Does that make any sense?
A singular perspective rather than an overarching perspective is what you're saying.
Yeah. It's a lot easier to identify with one person and you, as audience, learn the world with them.
I do like that. Miss DuVoe, thank you so much. And I think Robbie immediately like takes every script that they can find and just scoops them into their arms and walks into a corner and starts writing.
Robbie?
Yes, what?
We need to start shooting in 2 days.
Okay, I can do 2 days. I can do 2 days.
And it needs to be done in 6 days.
It needs to be done in 6 days.
You know that you've been here before. This isn't your first rodeo.
No, I know. I understand. All right. I can do that. Yes, absolutely. And Robbie fully like shuts off from everyone else and starts writing.
All right. What is your take on all this, Evie? You've sat there quietly.
Evie has been sitting in the shadiest part, not near the man in the suit, because ew, but probably like away from the others, smoking a cigarette, wearing a very large, like wide-brimmed hat and sunglasses, gloves up to the elbow, just kind of listening. And I think when Imani suggests that there could be one central focus, she like tips her sunglasses down to peer over them and sits forward and then puts them back on, seeing how excited Robbie got from the bit of direction given. But I think she's just smoking, like she's taking it all in and waiting to hear what's expected of her, because she is absolutely dreading having to work on this.
I think Imani has been trying so hard to not come up to you, and she finally gives in for a second and just walks over, still stays a far enough distance away from you, like a respectable distance, but just goes, Miss Belafonte, I am such a fan. I've been watching your movie since I was a little girl, and I'm just, a Canadian in Marquette got me through so many nights. I just, it's an honor and a privilege, truly. That's all I wanted to say. And she like backs up away and like stays back over in the corner. It's just like, whew, had to get that off my chest.
I think as you start to back up, Ebony takes her glasses, her sunglasses off, and you see, I'd say a relatively imposing figure. She's only 5'7", like she's not super tall, but she always has extra high heels on to try to support her height to make her more imposing. Always has shoulder pads that she's cutting a very sharp figure. Medium, deep brown skin. These big, big almond eyes that look very kind of... The innocence has gone from these eyes, and now they're very kind of shrewd, but very seductive. And she's wearing a very, very sharp, well-tailored suit that looks a little worn around some of the edges, like the hems are like a little bit worn out, but still very, very fashionable and stylish. And she has bright red lipstick on that's kind of over on top of her cigarette as well. And she takes her sunglasses off, cat eye, to look at you.
Oh, no, thank you, darling. I appreciate it. I always love a fan. I might be one of yours soon. You're on the up and up, on the rise. It was nice how you handled that producer, that writer there. Interesting way to make an opening for yourself to star in this picture.
Oh, Miss Belafonte, not at all, ma'am. I just was, I figured that if it was gonna be a story about something like that, this is a movie, ma'am, not a documentary. So I figured maybe that'd probably be best, or even making a role for you. I'm nobody in this right now.
Nobody yet.
I'm just trying to put in my due diligence and my work to have a career of my own.
Right when you say have a career of my own, Danny comes up between the two of you, goes, all right, look, whatever this shit show ends up being, I want you here, kid. I want you to be the lead, and you're going to be the mom. And then he walks off.
Like I said, nice opening.
Imani's eyes are wide as saucers right now, and it's just like bouncing back and forth between the producer and Evie right now, and she looks terrified.
You feel a satin-covered hand on your shoulder, and she leans in close. She smells like cigarettes and roses.
Just like Nana.
And she kind of gets close to you.
We all start from somewhere. And this is just your day. Someday it'll be mine. Some days it'll be you. And some days maybe it'll be both of us. But if you ever need anything, if you need to bounce ideas off of someone or get any kind of pointers, tips and tricks, you can come to me. I never want to let a new starlet down.
Wow. Thank you. That's real nice. And it means a lot. I think I'll take you up on that.
And I'll do everything I can to not upstage you.
And I think she leaves you in like a cloud of smoke.
Cass, Danny comes up and goes, did you read any of this?
Yes, of course I did.
Okay, good. You're going to be evil doctor, all right? Whatever. There's going to be an evil doctor. You have to be evil doctor.
I kind of assumed as much.
Okay, good. We'll figure out a whole costume, maybe something that goes with the whole, you know, vamp thing.
I am versatile beyond being Lenore.
I'm sure you are, kid. All right. Good talking to everybody. I got to go do some stuff. Oh, one more thing. Now, moments before this particular thing happens, Belle, you're outside with Johnny. Johnny just showed up with his camera. You've been talking to Danny, and he is very interested in having you come on set and take pictures and talk with people to try to drum up interest in this film. You can tell straight off that he's trying to use you as a way to get court press, basically.
So you and Johnny are standing out back, and Johnny goes, hey, take a look at this. I took these pictures this weekend and you got to see them.
I open up the envelope and I just kind of slide the picture out a little bit.
It's a picture of Cass's boyfriend kissing another man at a nightclub. And that is where we're going to end this episode. Thank you all so much for playing. Thank you all so much for listening. Let's find out where all these wonderful people are. Let us start with Candace.
Hello, everybody. It's Candace. I have been Ebony Belafonte, a seasoned professional who is not getting the due that they deserve. You can find me at That Candace Girl on Twitter, at Candace Marie on Blue Sky, and at Candace the Magnificent pretty much everywhere else.
Hello, hello, everyone. I am Sam Starr. I have played Imani DeVoe, our new up-and-coming starlet. You can find me, Sam, all over the internet at Lust for Life X. That includes Twitter, IG, and Blue Sky. Collecting my name on all social media like Infinity Stones, baby. Watch me on Transplanter every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, where I play another perfect little being that does zero things wrong ever in life, and you should love her.
Hey, I'm Michelle, and you can find me on the socials, including Threads now, at Michulhu, M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U. And you can find my music and Wes's amazing sound effects if you subscribe to the Plate Mail Games catalog through BattleBards.
Hey, y'all. I have been and will continue to be Mac Beauvais. You can find me everywhere online as at Strange Like That. Check it out. Commission some art. Do the thing. Summon me in your crystal ball. You know, the usual.
Hey, I've been Lev. I'll continue to be Lev, probably until I decide I don't like that name and I'll go to something else. I've been playing Robbie. You can find me on Twitter until it dies at LegoM2RS, at which point I'll go to other socials, but I don't have the energy for that. And also over at Mayday Roleplay, where I am a main cast member, we're honestly at this point, I don't know what we're doing because our schedule is wackadoo, but come check us out. We've done a bunch of different systems. Maybe we'll play a new one next. Thanks for having me.
And I am Wes Otis. You can find me as Plate Mail Games on all of the different places. You can find the show at 12 Sided Stories, usually the number 12 and then Sided Stories on Twitter and all the different places. We post every couple of weeks on there for new episodes. If you want to find us and have conversations with us, the best place is Discord. You can find the links on our website at 12sidedstories.com, all spelled out, all one word. And you can see what is coming up. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will speak with you soon. Bye, everybody.